Good afternoon, everyone. It's Joe Varnador. Hope everybody is doing well. It is a rainy Wednesday afternoon in Florida, but we absolutely need the rain. We've got Ellen with us for a few minutes, and then Melissa and I are going to take it home. How you doing, ladies?
Great.
Very good. And what I was going to, before you jump off, Ellen, you know that that's tomorrow in Harrisburg, right?
I do.
Okay. Gotcha. So I was looking at the email, and it was like next week, and I think but that's because of the one from last week. So, okay, very good. So I guess we're going to start off with Sylvia. You know, Sylvia has been around a little while, so I'm glad to be able to talk to her. She was, when I first started doing the calls here about 3.5 years ago, she was always on the calls and always working. So let's get Sylvia up and going here, and we'll go from there.
I actually don't see her on the call.
Okay.
So maybe.
So let's see if she jumps on here in just a minute. So maybe let's just kind of go into Brian, and then if we see Sylvia jump on just in a few minutes, we will we'll kind of circle back around to her.
Okay. So here's Brian's. And I'll get him on the line here. Okay. Brian, can you hear us?
I can. Can you hear me?
We can.
Very good. How are you doing, Brian? It's Joe.
Hi, Joe. It's great.
Very good. Okay, so I guess this is your first note transaction, so you got a little some butterflies in your stomach, so let's kind of talk it through and see if we can't figure some of this out for you.
Okay, great.
All right, so you've got here the pros are high yield, good equity, ITV. So you've checked on value, and you know what I tell people, especially people that are new, is that when you're buying a note, it's really no different than buying a house, in that when you're buying the house, obviously the big thing is to know the value of the collateral, which is the house. And then when you're buying the note, you still want to be concerned with what's the value of the collateral. And even though we're buying the note, we want to make sure that the collateral is there, so that, you know, if the note does go wrong, then we always have the collateral to go after it. So, you know, that's in many respects, it's the same thing. So, good deal. So, and then the average rent. So, what kind of questions do we have here then, as far as going through? We'll kind of walk through some of these questions, and I'll kind of let you ask them. You know, other than just reading the questions off the screen, let's just kind of talk about what some of the challenges some of the things you're popping up that you want to go through.
Sure. So, well, first thing you teach to look at is the payment history. So I coordinated the best I could all of the different payment histories. I don't exactly understand how to read the NAA histories, okay. But the taught in class how to use the actual payment and sort by that. And then if I do that, I come up with the spreadsheet that I listed there. September is missing, and I don't know if that's if they paid and it's just not being listed, or if they didn't even pay that month.
Okay.
And then my other concern is all the rest of the payments are all coming in. They're late, but not like real late. They pay sometime towards the end of the month, usually with a credit card or a MoneyGram.
Right. And so let's talk about let's go ahead, Melissa, and we'll pull up those two pay histories that we talked about. Two of the four are actually the ones that, you know, are the ones that I guess are telling the biggest and the best story here. But, you know, here's the thing, and here's what you've got to, you know, understand, and so that you, when you're talking with a potential investor out there, if you're selling them either a partial on a performing note, or you're selling them the entire note, is that it is notorious in the seller finance space that if a payment is due on the first, it is very rare that you're going to get it on the first. Okay, it's just in these lower price band properties, it's just kind of the nature of the beast. So I have people ask me all the time, you know, what do I consider an on-time payment? And my answer has been the same for a long time, and that is if they pay the payment before the next one is due, then I consider it an on-time payment. So if it's due on the 1st and I get it somewhere before the 30th, then I, you know, then to me it's on time. Now, obviously, it triggers a late charge in most cases, which, you know, is fine. I had a guy several years ago that he paid, and his payment was due on the 1st. He always consistently paid it on the 19th. Every month he got a late charge. And I called him, and I said, why don't we just make your payment due on the 20th? And I thought he was going to come through the phone and strangle me. He said, I want my payment left the way it is. I said, well, you're paying a late charge every month. He said, I don't care. This is the way I want to do it. And I said, okay, no problem. So, you know, that's just kind of the nature of the beast. And we just have to let our investors know, if you're working with outside investors, that that's just the way it's going to be. It's just going to be that it's not going to be on the 1st. You know, if they get 30 days, which means they haven't gotten it by the 1st of the next month, you know, then we can kind of get a little bit antsy or concerned. But up until that point, I would not be concerned about the pay history there. Okay. So what we've got here then, and Melissa, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the pay history, and I can barely read the top of that. But this is the pay history from April of last year through this month. So if we go through and we kind of look at that, we see that there's the total. Of course, they paid a late charge that month, so that one's good. Then we've got 8, and look, it was paid on the, let's see, there's that's the rest of the, there it is for 8-1, and then we've got 9-1, and the CC fee is, you know, they're paying it by credit card, which, you know, it could be credit card or it could be debit card, right? I mean, so it's probably, I wouldn't be concerned so much with thinking, oh my God, they're paying on their credit card and what happens when they get up to their limit, right? I mean, that's one of the things that would kind of run through our mind.
Yeah.
What happens is they kind of get there and the challenge is they're paying $13 more a month for the, you know, because they're paying with a credit card. So we've got this. So there is 9th month. There's the 10th month. There's the 11th month. There's the December payment. And then there's where the escrow came out to pay the taxes. There is January, and of course they're due for February, but we haven't gotten doesn't show us to February at this point. So I mean, is that is there something about that that's not?
This makes sense if I just go by the regular payment as mm-hmm. well. It's the NAA form, which is the other type. Like if you look at the September, well, first of all, the September 2015 is missing. And then also, like, if you look at that July payment history, there's one called July payment history. It's made by NAA, and it's not in a spreadsheet format like this is.
Right. So do we have the other spreadsheet there?
I'm looking. There's a Clear Springs, which
okay.
It's called July payment history.
Okay.
All right. Is this
NAA July pay history? Okay, here it is.
Okay, so yeah, there we go.
Ah.
Make okay. it a little bit bigger there if we can.
So what's the 1069?
Go ahead. What is it now? What's your question on that?
What's the 1069?
Okay, hold on.
It looks
so
like it's saying that's the
payment. That was an escrow disbursement, so that would have either been Pines County tax collector. If you'll look over there to the right.
Oh, I see that. Yes, that makes sense now.
Another one here in the fifth, Pines County tax collector. So those are disbursements coming out of the escrow account. The good news is that they are paying, you know, there is an escrow account set up for this one for the taxes, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. And initially in the documents there, it showed that they were not paid, but then when I actually went to the tax collector site, everything looks to be up to date, so that's good.
Right, and that's exactly right. So, you know, we trust what we have here, but we also verify, and then obviously the taxes are one of the easiest things to verify is simply by getting a hold of the local taxing authority and to see when, you know, to make sure that those are paid. So that's a good thing. So we can kind of, but we see that there's the tax disbursement, so that's good. So we can kind of get rid of that one. That history there, Melissa, if you want to go ahead and get out of that one. And then was there a question on this other?
Okay, so I've got, the next question is, one of the questions, or one of the things I wanted to be able to do is check their credit. Is that something that's listed here somewhere that I'm not seeing?
Well, typically the file is would not. When was this loan originated?
In 2015. Let's see here. May 2015. Colonial sold to Michael Hill.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the big questions I have is when I went through all of the documents and I made a spreadsheet of in order of all the documents, and they don't line up. Could you pull up that document that I attached?
What's the name of it?
It's called
the 2868 payment
title. Title.
Title summary. Okay.
2868 title.
Here it is. That's what you're looking at?
As you can see, it goes from Federal National Mortgage to Home America, then Home America to Rive Hodges, but then the next document is Home America to SFAH, and that's a quick claim deed, by the way.
Right.
It's not listed there. And then it goes Home America to Rive Hodges again as an assignment, and then SFAH to Colonial.
And it could be on this that there was something that was missed, so it was sent back. And then that was corrected, and then they corrected that with the special warranty deed, and then it kind of went back over that they could get that corrected, and it went back to Colonial then at that point.
So that looks good to you?
Yes, it looks fine.
Okay, good.
Good.
What's the next question?
And you had a question on checking their credit as well, and that's a question that, you know, pops up about every, you know, 2 or 3 months. And here's the thing. You can obviously, there's a couple of different ways that you can do this, and you do have the right to do it. I mean, there, you know, CoreLogic, there's a couple of folks out there that that you can sign up with, and you can, you know, obviously run people's credit. And what would allow you to do that is that if you're looking, in this case, you're buying somebody's loan, so you, because you're buying their loan, you're going to enter into a credit relationship with these people, so then that gives you the right to do that. Now, if you want to be able to do this, you know, long term, and you want to be able to, you're going to start doing some seller financing, and you want to be able to go in, and at the touch of a button, you go in, and you're going to, you're going to be able to check their credit to see if you're going to sell them a house, you know, that you've bought, and then you want to sell them seller financing. You know, you can go to some of the credit reporting agencies. What they're going to do is they're going to you're gonna go in, you're gonna fill out some paperwork, and you know, you've got to have a legitimate business, and you've got to have a legitimate reason for doing so. You know, you should be set up as either an LLC or a subchapter S or a C corporation, and then you've got to have a lockable office. If it's in your house, that's okay, but if it's got to be, you know, where you can lock it up, and you've got to have a lockable filing cabinet, and you've got to have a shredder, and so that you can shred documents that have this that has, you know, these people's information on it. So go through that process. I set that process up back in my office in 1992, and I haven't changed it, you know, since. So, you know, I'm kind of, I've been doing it so long that I'm not as familiar with the new process, but we've got people on the line like Dave Fernecki and obviously Jackie and some other folks that have gone through that process. But you have to, you know, they're going to come out and they're going to do a site visit and all of that as well.
Okay.
But typically, now, typically that credit report is not going to be in that due diligence file that you're going to get.
And is that something you do every time?
As far as checking credit?
Yes.
It is really... Let me just ask you a question. So if you looked at the pay history, and these folks have paid pretty well. I mean, they've been very consistent in doing that. So what if you then ran their credit and they had a 575 credit score, which obviously is pretty low, and they've got a bunch of missed payments or late payments on credit cards? Would that change your mind about buying this loan? If you knew the pay history was good, but you knew their credit wasn't so great.
Yeah, I don't know how important that is. That's kind of why I'm asking.
The pay history is, they're going to pay, what it says is they pay their house payment first, and that's right. What you're concerned about.
Okay.
I mean, very easy to make a credit card payment late. It's just one of those things, and boy, when you do, you know, they hit you with whatever that late fee is and all that kind of stuff. Now, if you were extending a brand new loan, Brian, you had somebody and you've got a house you want to sell them, and there's no pay history, there's no seasoning on the loan, buddy, right. you're gonna look at that credit, you're gonna do a credit report every time. But typically on a deal like this where you're buying the note and it's got a couple of years of seasoning on it, it's not that big of an issue. Unless there was you saw that the pay history and they were late every month. And you look at that and you go, oh my God, you know, they are late every month on their house, you know, on their house payment, they're late on everything. So this is kind of a recipe, you know, for a disaster, and they're literally a paycheck away from, you know, being in default. So I wouldn't be as concerned personally. I wouldn't be, and I know Eddie's the same way, and I know Bob's the same way. Personally, I wouldn't be, as long as we have a good pay history on the loan, you know, the other part of that really is not such an issue.
Okay.
You can go through the process of getting set up so that you can run credit on each one of the folks that you're working with.
Right, I will do that.
But again, you've got to have that locked office, and you've got to have all of those things that go along with it, you know, because of, you know, the Fair Credit Reporting Act and all of that kind of thing.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Let's see. The September 2015 payment is missing. Should I contact the trade desk to try to figure that out?
I would contact the trade desk and ask them what happened on that and why that doesn't appear there.
Okay, and then really, I guess the last question is from what you've seen of what I've done so far, or do you see anything I'm missing? Because that's kind of one of my worries is that I don't have the expertise to know what I'm not doing.
Right. So I don't see, you know, in what we've looked at here, I don't see anything that would indicate that we're missing anything. Yes, it looks like, you know, Colonial did originate this loan, And, you know, I don't know the specifics on that. That would be a trade desk question as well as to why they did that. And it could have been something that they bought in a pool and it was an REO, and now they, you know, they had a buyer come along and they sold it, and, you know, now they're selling the season note. So, but no, it looks like you've done, you know, you've gone through the process, and I would verify an email trade desk on that missing, you know, that so-called missing payment. And then I would go from there. But, you know, the taxes are paid, the pay history looks good, the title chain looks like it's good as well, and you've checked value on that also, and you're comfortable with the value.
Okay, I should probably get a current BPO, but
you know,
yes.
I would. I certainly would. I always do it. I mean, that's one of the things I do. And where is this asset located?
It's in Mississippi, which is
Mississippi. So what?
Kind of,
and this
concern.
Is me. I would just Google, you know, whatever town it's in Mississippi. I'd find a local, you know, Remax office or a C21 office, and I'd make a couple of calls and say, hey, can you run out and do a BPO on this property for me?
Got it.
You know, one of the things I always say that I just say, look, I'm looking to buy this property, or I'm looking to, you know, to find the value. I don't talk about buying the note. It's not because I'm being deceitful. It just means that I have to explain what buying the note is when I
right.
do that.
Okay.
But, you know, and what I do is I typically tell the person that's going to go out and do the BPO, is I just say, look, you know, I want you to go out, you know, get some pictures, let me know about the neighborhood, and, you know, don't try to beat them up on price. I mean, a good BPO is, you know, it's very important to you, and you just want to make sure that, you know, they go out and they get it done. I'd ask them to kind of get out of the car and take pictures and give me some street scenes as well, not just of the subject, but a lot of good pictures on it. And but I would certainly do that. I mean, when it all boils down to, at the end of the day, is your final go-to is going to be that, is going to be the collateral, which is the house.
Right. Okay. Good.
All right. And you can kind of look at, too, as you're kind of going through this, you can say, okay, you know, we look at that thing, the six things that are important when we're buying a performing note, and obviously, you know, the collateral, the borrower's pay history, the paperwork, and make sure the taxes are done correctly, and it was done, you know, in accordance with the way that it should have been done. It wasn't done on a piece of notebook paper, and, you know, it wasn't done on a cocktail napkin, and yeah, I've seen that in the past. So, you know, you want to make sure that it kind of meets those and kind of check those boxes. And but the most important is going to be the pay history and the value of the asset.
Right. Okay. Got it.
All right.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, thanks, Brian. Let us know how this works out. Melissa, looks like we have Miss Sylvia on the line.
We do. Sylvia, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hey,
Sylvia, it's Joe.
Hey, Joe. Long time no see.
I was telling you before you got on the line at the beginning of the call, before you got on, that Sylvia, you're kind of like me. You're one of those seasoned investors.
I like to think so, but
I mean that in a good
way.
Not. Right? I tell people I've been around the block so many times, I've worn a groove in the sidewalk.
Yeah, you're way ahead of my experience.
Very good. So you've got, tell us the story here on this. You've got a family member that is looking to divide up some land and sell it off. So what's going on here?
Yeah, well, he's actually, you know, and I haven't been brokering for about at least, I don't know, 6, maybe 8 months, because I've been buying, and so I kind of fell out of the loop as to, you know, with people even are buying land or buying something like this. But he develops, you know, land, and he builds and stuff, and so he had, he was looking at, and I didn't really get too wise now looking at, you know, some of these plats or lots, and and he's done this from time to time, you know, and he kind of keeps the note, and then I guess it, when they get ready to build, and, you know, they pay him off and stuff like that. But He kind of ran this through by me, and these were just some of the things that he was considering. And of course, he was asking me all kinds of questions about, you know,
breed. So Sylvia, so he's buying tracts of land.
Right. Well, he actually has these. These were kind of you know, family
property.
Given to him, yeah, and so he had, I think originally, or he still might have, you know, about 300 acres or more, I don't know, and he's been developing these, and, you know, really nice neighborhood, kind of high-end at one time. I think he's kind of lowered his prices because of the economy and such, but, so he has these, and I guess, you know, I'm sure he's paying taxes on them and stuff, but he develops them, and you know, they already have sewer and water and everything else, and then he also builds. So so he was talking about, you know, creating notes such where the tracts of land, he says, are anywhere from about 100 to 180, and then you know, he was talking about a 6-7% interest. 5 to 10 years, you know, down payment of 5 to 10%, and then he was going to create.
So here's my first question. You know, when we're dealing with land only, are these going to be improved, or are these going to be unimproved? So what I mean is so are these pieces of property, these individual tracts, have they been platted, and there's ingress and egress, there's they're buildable lots, they're something that you're not going to have to go through a lot of process getting water to all of these, and you know, are the services there? So that would indicate that it was an improved lot versus just a, you know, some pasture land out in the middle of nowhere, which is the
exactly.
least right.
Exactly.
So then the second part of that is then, so how do we, you know, is this a good process in which to create these? And obviously, you know, what are the values there? And, you know, he's indicating the values are $100,000 to $180,000. You know, typically, because this is vacant land, and it would be very, very difficult for a borrower to go out. Now, obviously, if you're a high-income individual, it's not going to be that big of a deal. But I would probably go in the, I would kind of, as far as the interest rates, I would look at it, how much they put down. So if they put down 25%, it may be a 6% rate. If they put down, you know, 15%, it may be, or 10%, it may be an 8% rate. So. You know, I would look at that, and I would kind of I would look at that depending on how much they put down. And then what I would do with these as well is you could term them, you know, at 10 years, but I would certainly put a balloon in there, either a 3-year or a 5-year balloon. Now, my thought process goes to this, and that would be, you know, if somebody's buying these and they're, you know, they're going to probably build a house on these at some time in the future. So these are probably going to get paid off early every time.
They're going to be paid off what?
Well, when somebody goes in to build a house on them, then they're going to, these loans will be paid off, because then there'll be a construction loan put into place to build the house, and then there would be permanent financing once the house was completed, because this is all vacant land, right?
Right.
So the likelihood of somebody going in and buying it and it going to term, but I would always put the balloon in there.
Okay.
I would probably look at, I'd look at credit on the borrowers as well.
Correct. Yeah, I stress that to them. You know, that was my biggest thing I was stressing to him, especially at being vacant land.
It looks like what he then, so let's just kind of run a scenario here. So let's say that, just to kind of make it easy on ourselves, that he sells one for $100,000. Mm-hmm. And so somebody puts down $10,000. So now we've got 90. So what he's thinking about doing is doing a 50% first, and then probably holding a 40% second. In this case, you would have $10,000 down, a 40% or $40,000 second lien, and then a $50,000 first lien, and what he would look to sell would be the first lien.
Correct.
And so, you know, technically his combined LTV is 90%, but the LTV on the first, which he would then be selling, would be a 50% LTV.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Correct. So and then of course, you know, he's going to get some money, you know, down. He's going to get then he sells the note. Now, I would tell you, I see your first question there is if that would be something that Colonial would be interested in, and probably not. Okay.
Why is that?
You know, well, they're just, you know, what they're doing with the fund now is they're trying, you know, to buy inventory that can be easily purchased by one of the students, by another one of the students. So these, when you're looking at a lot, you know, property, it probably wouldn't be a play for Colonial. Now, you know, FNAC, First National Acceptance Corporation, you know, in Saginaw, they would probably be a player on this type of paper. Maybe Jeff Armstrong would be a player on this type of paper. And then here's one other thought that you could think about as well. And if you've got individuals that have IRAs, this would be a great investment in an IRA, because I'll tell you that anytime an institution is going to buy this, they're most likely, you know, this is going to be more of, it's going to be a yield quote for a yield price, a yield buy by an institutional investor or a national funding source, and it's going to be an ITV situation as well. Mm-hmm. So if they're buying the first, a 50% ITV first, it's really not, you know, and the seller's holding the second, so the ITV is not going to be an issue. But if you're selling it to a national source, they're probably going to look at some kind of rate of return up in the 14 to 16% range.
14 to 16%,
yeah. Which that takes me back to really the folks that would do well with this is if you have some investors that want to make a good solid 8 to 10% rate of return, and that would be somebody that would buy something like this in their IRA, and would hold. It would be a great investment for somebody from that, because what you've done is you've got the seller slash the lender. You know, you've got him in the deal as well. I mean, he's got 40% on the back end, so he's going to step in and excuse me, and take care of this versus letting this go back. So I think the play on this would really be more to an IRA investor. This would be something that you could post these things on the forum, you know, the Note School forum, and there may be some students out there that would have some investors as well that's looking for a pretty solid, very solid investment. I mean, you've got, it is vacant land, it's improved vacant land, but again, it's vacant land, but the area that it's in, I mean, you know, you go up in that area and there's building all over the place, and it's, you know, it's government building.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, it's near Quantico, so there's certainly a, you know, some higher paid individuals up there. But I would think that's where your best play would be. Now, you could certainly call the guys at FNAC and talk to them and see what they would do, explain to them what you're doing here, and then kind of get a matrix of what they're looking at. Mm-hmm. And if you, I don't have it right here in front of me, but if you want to email me after the, you know, the call, I can get you the guy's name at FNAC that you would probably want to talk to.
Okay, appreciate that.
I think these are good solid investments for folks that have an IRA or want to get a good solid, you know, 8 to 10% rate of return based on what they are here.
Right, right. You said balloon. I guess, does Dodd-Frank apply to?
Well, not apply to this because it's not. It's land. It doesn't have a house on it. So the Dodd-Frank situation would really not apply here. So I would put a balloon in every one of these, and I would probably do it with a 3-year, maybe a 5-year. But you know, the way that I'm looking at these, and these are higher end lots. I would say that, you know, the outside for anybody would be probably 3 to 4 years, because somebody's going to buy this and then they're going to build a house, and then obviously as soon as they go out and get a construction loan, then that underlying, well, both of that first and that second are going to get paid off, so that, you know, when they get their construction loan and then roll that over into a permanent bankable loan.
So he can do as many as he wants of these.
He can do as many as he wants, absolutely.
And then the other thing, too, does he need lender policies don't apply to this? Or?
Typically, when I've sold land, you don't, because there's really it's not a challenge. But it wouldn't be expensive to do that, and certainly, I mean, you know, $400 or $500, so I would probably just go ahead and do that.
Mm-hmm. A lender's policy.
Right. And again, you look at this, and the reason that kind of negates the whole Dodd-Frank thing is really because it's more of an investment. It's not really doesn't have a property on it.
Uh-huh. Okay. And one more question. You were saying CoreLogic. Did you say with CoreLogic you can do one-offs as far as checking credit or?
Not really. They want to go in, and you're going to get set up. They're going to check your office, and they're going to come in, and they're going to do a site inspection and things like that. I don't know. If anybody wants to type in somebody that they've used let's see. Anybody please type in, you know, what if you've got somebody that you're working on. I don't see anybody yet, but I know Dave Fernacki. But I think he got set up himself to do that. I know Jackie did. I'm not sure if any of you other guys have, but you know, you would do it long term.
Okay.
By doing that, yeah.
Okay. With CoreLogic as well, you're saying?
Yeah, you set it up, and then you, okay. Like with mine, I can simply go in and I log in, and I can put name, address, social, but I only do that obviously if I have a, you know, reason to do that, and then I can pull credit and then pay about.
And who do you have?
I use Experian, but I don't know. They're really tough to get into now. But you know, I started using them back in 1992, so they kind of left me alone. They don't even do site checks anymore. So, and Jason Ortiz said that you may want to check with Credo, ECO.
With who? I'm sorry.
Credco, CREDCO, and they may be able to do one-offs for you as well.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate all the insight.
Very good. You're very welcome. And but again, I mean, this is if this were land in West Texas, that's out in the middle of nowhere, it would be a whole different story than it would be, you know, than it is, you know, A, where it's located, B, the price of it, and C, that the flexibility that your family member has in creating this note.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, great.
Okay.
Well, I certainly appreciate it, and it's always a pleasure talking to you.
Okay, good deal. So let's answer a couple of these questions. I see that you already have, Melissa, but Alan says, would Joe initiate collection on subperforming of 120 days from due date, or no payment for 120 days. Yeah, I mean, I would initiate the process, because you've got to move them from one point to another, Alan. So they've got to get that demand letter in order to kind of move them forward. But I would go ahead and push that forward just to get them off the mark. It may not, you know, they may not even, you know, it may not make any difference, but I would go ahead and do it now and let them know that you're willing to move forward and do what you need to do to protect yourself. So, yes, I would. Let's see. Jamon says, how can you tell the taxes are paid on this one? It shows that the taxes are delinquent. And you answer that. The best way is to contact the local. That's exactly right. Perfect answer. Collect the local tax collector's office, and they'll do it. And then, Luis, I don't know, was that an audio issue on our side, Melissa?
I don't think so.
Okay, good. All right, so maybe it's something there. So why don't we go ahead, and who else do we have here?
Terso had questions, but I don't see that he's on. I'll scroll down.
Let's look at questions and see if it's something that we think would kind of benefit everybody here. And let's see. So as we progress into the notes business, come up that we'd like to discuss. When company owning notes to being landlords, we presented those. Let's see. Should not have to deal with. Okay, yeah, this goes back to. Yeah, this is a great question. So the question that really that Terso has here is, so he's talking about people that have either they have rental properties or they are thinking about acquiring rental properties. And what he's been coming up with is people are saying, well, notes are assets that depreciate, that you lose value over time, in contrast with owning houses and renting them out. So I was wondering, what would you suggest that could be the argument to go with this? So here's the thing, and this is kind of like that evolution or that growth of a real estate investor where you start out with a bird dog, and then you go to a wholesaler flipper, and then you go to owning properties as a landlord, and then you end up being the deal architect. So I always kind of go back to the same story, and I was talking with a while ago a guy that he had a couple of hundred houses that he rented, and he's a landlord, and he has a management company. And guys, whether the number is 10 or it's 20 or it's 50, it's kind of the same way. Most people that are getting into buying properties, they're taking on a lot of debt, number one. And then number two, they're looking at the payoff at the end of the day is that if they can finance them for 15 to 20 years, and Lord knows, I would hope no one's buying rental properties that you got to go 30 years on. But anyway, so you're looking to buy. So you've borrowed $100,000 or $80,000 to leverage into this property. And hopefully in 20 years you'll have it paid for. And let's just say that it rents, it's an $80,000 house and it rents for $800 a month. And you're getting a $100 a month positive cash flow or $125 a month positive cash flow. So you've got this loan out there, you're squeaking by as far as cash flow, but the light at the end of the tunnel is, hey, when I get this paid off, then I'll get the entire $800 a month, obviously minus the taxes and the insurance and the upkeep and all of those other things. So you're depreciating the property, which IRS lets you do, but here's the thing. Most of these houses that people are using as rentals, what is that house, number one, going to look like in 20 years after being rented for 20 years? So, yeah, you've got kind of an appreciating asset, but that we could put a check mark by that and say, well, maybe not. And then, with this guy that I was talking to, I said, so what? So he said, Joe, I'm just working all the time. I've got these 200 rentals, and I'm just working this. It's all the time, even with my management company. And he says, I'm just, I'm getting a little bit of positive cash flow. He said, but God, at the end of the day, I'm going to have $30,000 a month in income and per month at the end of the, when I get all these paid off. But most likely, the challenge is that, do I want to postpone my life for 15 years until I can get a payoff and see the payoff? Well, it's going to allow me to spend more time with my family. Well, in 15 years, if your kids are 5 or 6 or 10 or 15 years old, what, you know, they're grown. So, you know, you're still kind of, you're looking at this, and you've got this huge debt, and what if we had another downturn, or just that particular area had a downturn with a factory that closed and that type of thing. So now you've got 25 or 30 of those 200 houses or 50 that are empty. So then that causes this cause and effect where now there's not enough coming in to pay all the monthly mortgage payments on this. So now at the end of the day, I'm going to lose them all. So the part of that you've got to look at with being the bank versus being the landlord, you know, is simply this. Number one, you no longer are waiting, you know, sometime down the road to get them paid off. Now, you know, you may say, well, I don't have any of these that are paid off. Well, you know, it depends on what you're going to do. If you're doing this through a turnkey rental process, you know, you're acquiring these loans, you know, at 20 to 30 to 40% of current as-is value. You're getting a down payment, and then they're going to pay you off over 5 to 7 years. So, yeah, the loan is paying itself off, but you don't have typically the loan on the other side of it. You're not concerned with the upkeep. You're not concerned with the taxes. You're not concerned with the insurance, because anytime you originate a loan, either through the turnkey process or you're originating a loan and it's not a turnkey loan, you're selling it to an end user, you're always going to include taxes and insurance in the monthly mortgage payment. So guys, you know, people kind of, they think they're enamored with this, but I can promise you that at the end of the day, every landlord gets burned out by being a landlord. No matter how good of a management company they have, it's one of those things that just over time it's going to wear you out. So that's why we know that being the bank is a much better process. You know, yeah, it's not the note isn't depreciating. You're just getting it. You're getting it paid off over a period of time, and it's just, you know, that's why the banks don't deal with real estate. That's why the banks deal with loans. So Melissa, do you think that kind of covered that as far as getting the, you know, getting the goodie out of that? Let's see if we've got any questions here. Let's see. No questions there. So do you think we took care of that little concern there as far as that goes? I mean, you've got people that, again, it's just one of those things that once you get out of that, and you know, my dad and I had 38-40 rentals, you know, and we've noted out of every one of those. So it's just one of those issues that, you know, it's just so much easier. You know, it's so much easier. So anyway, the other question here for those guys was this, and the other thing is that through some networking, I've found two people that might be interested in buying notes. Since this is the first time I do this, I'd like to make sure I do it correct, don't mess it up, you know. I'd like to go with you through the necessary steps to do this. Usually I'm not like this, but I've never done it. Melissa, on the website, there is a process for brokering a note, is there not?
Yeah, it's actually not on the website yet. I have a copy of it, and if anybody wants a copy of the Zarina made a checklist, and we can send that out to anybody who's interested in getting that until it gets on the website.
Okay, very good. So there is a process and a checklist that Zarina is working on, and it's kind of, is it done? I saw it, but I can't remember if it's done kind of like a flow chart, but it is just the process of what you do. I think she had actually sent it out last week, and I did look through that, and it was really good. So, yeah, if any of you want that, yeah, there it is, brokering hybrid model. So Zarina is finishing that up, and that should be that should take you through the process, and you should be able to sit down that, really, with any of your investors. I mean, you could kind of change it up a little bit, take brokering off of that, and just, you know, what to expect, and you could kind of go through. You can kind of change that if you wanted to use it as a kind of edit that to show your potential investor how the process works. Or you can use that kind of as a cheat sheet for yourself as well. All right, so if you want that, get with Melissa and she will and she'll send that out to you also. let me go back, Melissa, to, I think we had a question from Lise, and that is, just bought an asset. Title says 2015 taxes are delinquent. I did a recent BPO, and it says the taxes are current. Both inquiries are recent. Don't know why there would be a contradiction on there unless it was just something that was missed. Certainly, I would make, you know, right after this call, call the local, you know, wherever the property is, you know, Google and find the local tax collecting tax office and the city in which it's located in or the county, and I would give them a call and ask them about that. Okay, and they'll tell you exactly what it is. And sometimes, and a lot of times you can see it right online as well. But if you want to talk to somebody, certainly you can do that. And so we've got a couple of people already here. One is Michael Richard wanting to get a copy of that. My friend Lisa says, hey, it looks slick. Can you send that to me as well? Okay, so is there any other questions that we have today, Melissa?
Nope, that's it.
So we cleaned a lot of stuff up today. It's all good content. And guys, I'm glad that you're asking these questions, and what that means is you're out there engaging in the business. And you know, I'm really glad that you guys are doing that. So let's see, John, you said, am I speaking in Pennsylvania this weekend? And it is in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. It is at the Red Lion. I can tell you where it is. I'll be doing tomorrow night, I'll be doing an hour and a half presentation. And then on Saturday, I will be doing a full day class. But it is, hold on a second. Let me pull this up. I can tell you pretty close to where it's going to be. Let me see, Harrisburg, there we are. And it is off of Eisenhower Boulevard. I'm going to be staying at the Courtyard by Marriott in Harrisburg, but it is the Red Lion that is directly by that. And you can also go to Harrisburg Rias, and you'll see that information there. But I'll be doing an hour and a half presentation tomorrow night, and then I'll be doing a full day class there on Saturday. You can email Judah, J-U-D-A-H, at the, Judah, J-U-D-A-H, Hoover.com. Judah at the, JudahHoover.com. All right. Yeah, it's going to be warm. You're exactly right. And it's going to be the same, about 70 degrees here. So I'm taking some warm weather with me. Anything else? Yep, you've got people looking for a copy of that. And so there we go. And Lisa, we're still looking good on that. I'll give you a call maybe Friday afternoon if you're going to be around on that meetup we want to try to do in July. So talk to Lori and so on. So I'll catch up on that as well. All right. So Melissa, anything you need to add to that?
Well, we just want to go over the titanium office visits and go ahead and send an email in if you're interested in attending any of the titanium office visits, and mark your calendars for June 2nd and 3rd for the summer summit. Details will follow about where it'll be and your booking information, but hold those dates. The DS News article we still have up there in case anybody hasn't had a chance to read it.
Okay.
And just our emails.
Very good. So, yeah, if you guys haven't been to Summer Summit, it's a great – I haven't been in the last 2 years, so it looks like I'm going to be able to go this year. So that'll be a great thing. So I'll see some of you guys out there and get to meet some of you in person that are going to be going there. So, yeah, that's it. And, Melissa, thanks so much. Great job today. And we will talk soon, and we'll see you somewhere around. And, by the way, if you're going to be in Indianapolis as well, I'm doing a full-day class there next Saturday in Indianapolis also. If you want to email me about the details or where it is, I can certainly get back with you on that, and it's joe@noteschool.com. All right, very good. Thanks, Melissa. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye, guys.